One, two, three. All life in faith, all life in faith. Hey, hello and assalamualaikum. Welcome to All Life in Faith, my podcast. I'm Alif and right now is 8:49 PM. It is 13th of November, starting a bit late. I was about to start yesterday, but it was raining. It was raining just now also, but it stopped already, so here I am. So okay, today, okay, if you're not familiar with my podcast, I'm going to cover some pop culture news, everything and anything in between, and I'm going to cover all the news from last week. So just like the title says, last week tonight. Yeah, I'll be paying a bit of a homage to John Oliver's show, so this one also applicable to my this particular podcast. So let's crack on with it. So I'm going to use, if you're not familiar with me, I have a blog, alllifeinfaith.blogspot.com. So I'm going to use my weekly housekeeping posts, which I accumulate all the news in one podcast. So if you want to check it out, you can go to the link that I will post below. Okay, I'll be using the housekeeping week 53. So this week is a bit, I would say this bit doesn't have a bit more cohesive segment like, you know, last week, but just go I'll go alphabetically. So let's start. If this is not here, it's not supposed to be here. Okay, well, we'll start with AMC, you know, the channel AMC. AMC has been mostly popular with, you know, the Breaking Bad series and of course the Walking Dead and the zombie series. I as, you know, maybe some people out there just, you know, have a falling out of the series. I haven't been tuning in for the last 3 seasons already because it's not as appealing to me as before. So if you do not know the recent, you know, how do you say it? The recent plot storyline that they went just last week or two weeks ago. I think it's last week, yeah. If you do not want to know, you can skip a bit. For a bit two minutes. I'll talk about it, but in 2 minutes, so can skip. Okay. If you want to know, it's like Rick Grimes, the main antagonist, is, you know, is just exit the series. But how he exits the series, you know, it is a bit divisive, if you can say that. Because AMC officially announced a trilogy of Rick Grimes movies as they try to expand again the Walking Dead universe. So the main actor, Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick Grimes, he described this as the end of the beginning. He said I like the idea that we get to tell a bigger story, maybe with a sort of wider vista. And I've always been interested in what's going on out there, you know, whether or not there's contact with the wider world. I want to know the meta of it all. And I suppose to be able to kind of touch upon that in a contained story for me is a very exciting proposition. Maybe it is the start of a bigger story. So, okay, the chief content officer, of MC Scott M. Gimple for the series. They report that it is a multi-year plan for the Walking Dead universe. There are other projects in development as well, including more movies, specials, TV shows, and digital content. Sure. Okay. This is quotes. We have a lot on the horizon, starting with a new epic featuring one of the greatest leading actors in television history and one of the best people I've ever met. These films are going to be big evolutions of what we've been doing on the show, with scope and scale of features. We are starting with the first part of the continuing story of Rick Grimes, and there is much more on the way, featuring yet unseen worlds of The Walking Dead and faces from the show's past, as well as new characters we hope to become favorites, told by TWD veterans and emerging voices. We want to break new grounds with different distinct stories, all part of the same world that's captured our imagination for nearly a decade of the day. Okay, Deadline confirms that the plan is for the first Rick Grimes story as movie to explore where he was taken on that helicopter and focus on what he faces in a new corner of the zombie apocalypse. Okay. Is it something that pique your interest? Maybe you've already falling out of the series, because they've been going down, on a downwards trajectory for the last, a couple of seasons. So with this new development, are you going to tune in? They still do not reveal whether it's going to be released on the cinema or just, showcase on their channel. Still do not know, but it is going to be a big, like a movie, a feature film. So is it going to interest you to tune in back? I'm not sure, because the storyline is always the same, right? They always focus on the zombies, but they always play more on the human politics and how the zombie apocalypse affect each and every one of them. So where can they go? Because this is going to be broaden their focus a bit. The fear of the Walking Dead focus on the before of the events of the apocalypse. So, and now they're going to go a bit more broader, going to somewhere else, going to see how other people cope with this zombie epidemic. So, there's a bit of interest there, something new, something good. So, we'll see. Okay, let's move on to another project by MC. They are revealing us they are going to make a Breaking Bad movie as well. It is going to be a sequel following Jesse after the series finale, with Aaron Paul set to return. So, I unfortunately did not on the bandwagon of Breaking Bad. I haven't watched the series yet, but I heard of very, very good things of the series, and they said the finale is good already, ending the series on a good note. So if this movie is going to follow Jesse, the other main character, is it going to interest you to see where he goes next? What do you guys think? Can Jesse hold the movie on his own as a character? And after, the aftermath of the finale, you think it's going to be interesting to see him again on the screen? So Are you interested? You know, with the other main character won't actually be in the picture, or maybe you say you can just go in like tormenting him, you know, in the afterlife, just, you know, like a ghost being his, you know, his conscience, something like that. Yeah, they can play around if they can tell a good story. Just like how they, you know, making, what was the spin-off, what is it? Better Call Saul, right? The prequel. So they can actually tell some different story, really interesting story, something that can, it's not just like a throwaway, you know, a throwaway story. They actually have something they can tell. So with this, they're going, that one is good, they go in, you know, they went to the past, just like, you know, Fear of the Walking Dead, they went to the past. Now they try to go into the future with Grimes going in his own direction, on his own, into the future, to something bigger, going way out there, maybe, and now working back, going into the future, right after the ending, you know. Is it going to interest you? You can follow Jesse Pinkman, you know, into the how is he going to recoup right after the aftermath of the finale. This is an interesting project. You know, actually have some debate online for between the fans, right? Whether they want the series to end just like that, or they actually want to see where they can go next after this. It's something that's worth talking about. And from a movie of a series, we move on to another channel or another platform, so to speak, which is HBO's network. The production now officially begins. This, you know, I also didn't catch this series as well, but I found good thing as well. So okay, this is a synopsis that HBO released. In the Deadwood film, the indelible characters of the series are reunited after 10 years to celebrate South Dakota's statehood. Former rivalries are reunited, alliances are tested, and all wounds are reopened, as all are left to navigate the inevitable changes that modernity and time have brought. So, yeah, it is said here in the article, from Collider, the series ended rather abruptly, and season ended from in the end of the third season. So people that have been clamoring for the continuation, so at least this is going to be, it's not going to be a continuation of what they would like, but this is a chance for the, you know, original showrunner, original cast, original people behind it, the production, to actually tie some loose ends, you know, also bring back fan favorite characters. Like, all of them are coming back for the Deadwood movie. Ian McShane, Timothy Olyphant, Molly Parker, Paul Malcolmson, John Hawks, Hannigan, Leighton Cully, Brad Dourif, Robin Wygert, William Sanderson, Kim Dickens, and Gerald McRaney. There's going to be a new one. Jade Pettijohn is going to play Caroline. Okay, the movie has been written by David Mitch, who created the series, and will be directed by Daniel Minahan. Yes. Yeah, at least it's something that, you know, just like I said, they can tie some loose end. There is something that actually they need to do, even if they cannot, you know, make a proper full season. At least they have this movie to, like I said, tie some loose end, ending it on a good note. Not ending it abruptly, you know, just leaving the fans hanging. So HBO is actually going through this with this song. That's good. Okay, I'm going to move on. It is always don't have this actually. Okay, I'm going to move that. Okay. We're going to move on to a new streaming platform, but from the Titan Disney. So the name of their streaming service is Disney Plus. Okay. Bob Iger, the CEO, the chairman and CEO, Bob Iger revealed the official name, logo, and new platform details today on the company earning call back in November 8th. Okay. Iger says the service is on track for late 2019 release. Okay. Yeah, in this article they say it makes sense because the remaining Netflix contracts will come to an end. For, you know, the Marvel series that hasn't been cancelled yet, and maybe some other properties by this from other Disney properties that's going to end the contract. So maybe that makes sense, you know. You can just take in all that properties and going to release it for this streaming service, streaming platform. Okay. Additionally, Iger confirmed the rumored Loki series, which will see Tom Hiddleston coming back as the fan favorite, you know, Loki. So he also announced the another Star Wars series that's going to follow John Favreau's The Mandalorian. It is going to be a Rogue One prequel series. It's going to focus on Diego Luna's Cassian Andor. So they have a lot of projects in, you know, in the works. Dude, on the TV side, they are planning a serious reimagining of the films High Fidelity and The Mighty Ducks. Okay. As an animated series. Oh no, that one is different. Okay. Reimagining of The Mighty Ducks and another project, animated series set in the world of Monsters Inc. So maybe it's going to be 2D or 3D, so maybe just like, you know, the How to Train Your Dragon series, right? So maybe just like that. In the realm of film, okay, Disney's lineup. Christmas comedy Noel starring Anna Kendrick, a live action adaptation of Lady and the Tramp. So that project has been in the works for quite some time. It's going to be real life dog probably, and they're not going to do CGI, right? Live action, so maybe that CGI is going to be maybe the mouth part is going to move with the, you know, the voice cast, so probably. And Don Quixote, written by Bill Ray of Captain Phillips fame. So that's interesting. The Paper Magician, Stargirl, and Togo, more many others. So there's a lot of projects which will maybe we'll have more details coming when we are approaching that release date, late 2019. So we're going to see, and I will report on that. So if you want to know more, keep on tuning in to my podcast. Exact details on the price point, launch date, and more are still to come, and I will promise more information to come at an investor event in April 2019. Okay, Iger previously said it would be less than Netflix, so maybe that's good. Yeah, what do you guys think? So many projects, are you already going to buy it day one it comes out, or are you going to wait for the, you know, the properties to come out, for the new properties to come out, and or are you going to hear some of the review of the platform itself and the review of the projects that they release? Are you going to wait, or are you not interested at all? Let me know. I'm actually, I do not have the money for this kind of thing, but I'll be tuning in. I want to see all these new projects. So I'm so, you know, interesting. Just like the Mandalorian Star Wars series, even the new one, this one, the new Rogue One prequel. You know, the movie itself, Rogue One, a Star Wars story. That one is really, really good. The story, the characters make the film, right? So now we're going to follow Diego Luna characters, Cassian Andor. It's going to follow him before the event in the movie itself. So are we going to run into Felicity Jones character or not? We're going to see him, you know, being, you know, how you say it, being on the gray area, right? He was doing some shady stuff, right? She still do not know other information on that project still. Maybe after the Mandalorian series is finished, then we're going to hear more on that series next. Yeah, it's a bit interesting, right? To see they go to there, to that timeline. They have so many other places that they can go, but at least maybe if they want to focus on a fan favorite character, probably. Yeah, we'll see. Okay, we end that one. Okay, I want to highlight something, another series that I didn't follow that actually goes on for 13 season, which is It Is Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Sorry, Philadelphia. Sorry. Okay. Okay. If you don't know, the season finale just had last week, if I'm not mistaken. So one of the major talking points is the dance sequence of the main character. I do not have any other inkling of what this particular scene entails. What's the backstory? What is the, you know, what is the relationship between the characters? But from what I can gather from the conversation round, the comment section and everything, it is the main character. Is coming out as gay, and in the attendance, you know, it is going, and this dance routine, it is symbolize how he is feeling, right? So in the attendance, it is actually taking part in a jail, if I'm not mistaken, right? You can see that in the video. So in the attendance, there is his father that do not Kundun is, you know, he is coming out. So there's another character, an individual who is quite close to this character that's coming out. So he's watching to the father. You can see the father actually, you know, walking out at the first half of the performance. But the performance itself is really, really beautiful to me, because it is a modern dance, right? I am in no way an expert in this field, but dancing is really you know, how you say it? It is a how do you say it? It is an art. Art sometimes cannot be fathom, cannot be understand in some ways, right? How do you judge this kind of thing? So even and this the contemporary art, you know, in this dance sequence, even though you cannot really tell whether it is proficient, whether it is in high value, in this someone that is really, I know, it is really proficient in his dancing or something, I cannot tell, but I can actually tell how the two dancers, right, that are telling a story. So between the, you know, in the rain, you know, on the stage, everything is beautiful. The camera work, you know, everything. How the dancer interacting with each other. It's really beautiful. But I'm getting choked up when looking back to that scene. So if you know, you can tune in and see how beautiful the dance sequence is, and appreciate that the series has been going on for so long, and for good reasons. It's going on for 13 seasons already. So, in that season, they have been experimenting with how they are telling their stories, right? And this one is actually a perfect representation of how they approach storytelling. So you can see it. So okay, give it a go and see how you like it. What I'm saying, just try to watch it, you know, as objectively as you can. You know, sometimes you can appreciate the art, right? But when you're like, you know, on life, it's been, you know, such a diehard from the first season. Now you see how far this series has gone. Then this particular scene is, what do you love most about the series? Probably, yeah. Give it a go and let me know what do you think of the scene itself. Okay, let's move on to I'm not sure I want to cover this one. Okay, I'll try to how do you say, how to go through some of these points, some of this news, be, you know, faster. You're doing some fast one. It's a bit far, that doesn't have enough news to expand upon, but yeah, can try. Okay, first is Johnny Quest adaptation. It's going to be adapted by Chris McKay. This project was supposed to be directed by Robert Rodriguez before, but since he's a bit busy, you know, with the upcoming Alita Battle Angel, the directorial a job is given to Chris McKay, given by Warner Brothers. You know, the Lego Batman movie is really excellent for me. As a meta computer and even as a Batman movie itself, so I think he can make make the transition to a live action. Can make it seamlessly, I think. He is actually announced to be directing Nightwing and Dungeons and Dragons as well, so we don't know if this is going to be his next project right away or just a directorial shuffling just to, you know, throw the fans off a bit, probably. I don't know yet. We'll see. I think Kusmaki can do it if he's going to adapt this Johnny Quest series. It's a bit campy, I think, for looking back, but I think I can make the into, you know, the modern reboot there. And moving on to the next one is Paddington 3 is in the works. Yes, I love this Paddington. The first one, I was, you know, afraid of it's going to be just a straight, you know, a bumbling idiot movie, right, of, you know, a fish out of water situation. But it is actually surprisingly endearing, right? Quite a family-friendly film. Really love it. And the Paddington 2, the second one, which is actually, you know, doing what sequel doesn't do as frequent, right, as you want. Actually doing better than the predecessor, right? Paddington 2 is more of the best thing for Paddington, the first one, right? I really love that one as well. So it's always a bit, you know, bumbling, you know, the fish out of water thing, but they still have some really good, really intense family values there in there. So now it makes sense for is it White Star Company? Wow, I don't think this is going to be the same company as for the third one. Oh, okay, Warner Brothers. It's not going to be Weinstein Company, right? Let's see who's going to produce it, though. So still, Paddington 3 is in the works, but I possibly the director for the first two. Probably he won't, you know, return, which is really unfortunate because you really make the film lively with Paddington. It really makes the film what it is, right? So I'm still hoping that he's going to return, but yeah, too bad though. Oh, he's going to do it, he's doing another project, you know, the producer David Heyman. But it's too bad. I hope he can return, but if he cannot, I hope they will get some good talent to make it up, right? To live up to what Paul King did for the first two. Really hope so. Okay, Paul involved in it. I wanted him to be involved in it because I think it's such a significant voice, but I don't think he'll direct it. He worked on the idea, he comes up with the idea with Simon Farnaby and Mark Burton, but and then they develop it and come back for more, back and forth, and then it'll get written and Paul will come in and stir it up a little bit. But it's incredible collaborator, Paul. Very positive, very supportive. It was the producer David Heyman saying he also cautioned that Paddington 3 won't get made unless they all agree it can be on the same level as of quality as the first two films. I hope we get to make it. It's really fun. It's a fun idea. I don't know yet. I don't want to do it if I don't think it's gonna be good. So that's good at least. That's a good perspective to go with it. So I'm hoping for the best as well. I love the first two, so I hope they'll make it. So it's a good family film. If you haven't watched it, watch it with your family. You'll have You will laugh, you cry, you will have your heart warm. Okay, let's move on to another one. Okay, Shrek is going to be rebooted by the Minions architect Chris Meledandri. It's been a while since the last film, right? For Shrek Forever After, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth one. And the spin-off as well, Puss in Boots. I love that one as well. It's really, you know, entertaining, right? As a, you know, as a film itself. So. Now they are planning to reboot it. Meledandri did tell Variety that while he's been tasked with finding new stories to tell, he wants to keep the original and now iconic voice cast of Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, and Antonio Banderas intact. Without mentioning any other, because I got Cameron Diaz, John Lithgow. Okay. As his quotes, when you look back at on those vocal performances, they are awesome. And while you certainly could make a case for a complete reinvention, I find myself responding to my own nostalgic feelings of wanting to go back to those characterizations. The challenge for us has been to find something that really does feel like it's not simply yet another film in a series of sequels. So, we're going to do a soft reboot, right? Including the original voice cast, the original character, but maybe introducing new characters that they can spin off to a new series, probably. Yeah. There's no other details yet. He said, following that, there's a tremendous amount of fun to be had in that world, but it's high bar to find a story that's truly world. It's truly well. It's a weird quote. You want to find something in the narrative that really feels like a departure. Yeah. We'll see. I kind of like that series. Like, they're not going to do a full reboot or a soft reboot. I wish it well. Because the first track, it's like a meta commentary. Like, on the fairy tale and the concept of fairy tale. So then they start to add to the sequel more and more. They start to lose the meaning of how they're supposed to comment on the genre itself, right? They start to being one themselves. So we'll see how they can reboot it. Do you think they should just leave the series as it is, or you know, just maybe let them give it a go, then maybe we'll see how it goes, right? I'm on the letter now. I'll see where it goes next. Okay, on moving on to another animated project. If you don't know, Super Mario Brothers is going to be make into another film. In this one is a CGI film. It's going to be in partnership with Illumination, and between Nintendo and Illumination. So if you do not know, there is a live action adaptation before that is really infamous, so the 1993 one. So the better said, the less said of it, and the better. So now the creator Shigeru Miyamoto is going to be front and center in the creation of this film. So it's going to be fully in the driving seat. So what's the same guy as well, Chris Meledandri, the guy from Illumination. I like that this was not done well for the first the first time. I think that's more exciting or more worthy, worthy. Then simply making another version of a film that was done incredibly well to begin with. We are keeping him front and center in decoration of this film, the creator Shigeru Miyamoto. I've rarely seen that happen with any adaptation where the original creative voice is being embraced like we are embracing Miyamoto. There's a history in Hollywood of people believing that they know better than the people responsible for a property. I've made that mistake before. What kind of mistake? No. It is an ambitious task. The challenge is taking things that are so thin in their original form and finding depth that doesn't compromise what generation of fans love about Mario, and what also feels organic to the iconography and can support a three-act structure. Okay. This is one of the tricky project because, you know, trying to adapt a game into a movie will be, you know, quite an insurmountable task. You know, because if you know playing games, you are the player, you as the player is controlling the narrative. You are giving the character the voice, you are doing all the actions. You are being active, you know, in the storytelling perspective, the storytelling aspects. So for the movie, you are just sitting back. You are seeing, you know, as mentioned before, the three act structure, act one, act two, act three, playing out in front of you, and you're just being passive as an audience, seeing it goes in front of you for an hour and a half probably. Yeah. And how do you adapt this story, you know, because Mario Brothers is not this storyline there, but it's really flimsy, you know, really thin compared to how movies are told. Because you are the character, you are the character controlling Mario, right? You are the player. You are telling the story by how you play. But how do you know, tell this in a movie? You know, because Mario have you know, some voices, have some dialogues, but for movie that he has to have, you know, much more dialogues. Even if Luigi, you know, if Bowser, you know. So how are they going to do this? I hope they can take some inspiration from how Castlevania has been adapted for the Netflix series. I love that series because it pays homage to the game series itself, right? And by using well-known characters, the names, everything, the characteristic, but they make their own storyline. They make their own whole storyline. They pick and choose, try to pick some of the good aspects, some of the memorable, you know, signature aspect of the game series, and they apply it when they can into this whole new narrative, new perspective. So I hope they can do it as well for Mario, this Super Mario Brothers CGI film. They can make a whole new narrative, you know. Maybe just a simple one. He is a plumber. He is going into this magical kingdom. That's going to save the, you know, the princess from Bowser. Maybe that's the whole storyline, and then they can pick and choose from, you know, from this series, this long running series, pick and choose what they can apply there. They can introduce Luigi, maybe, right, introduce other characters. They can choose some other more memorable, you know, aspect, like how in the third act maybe you can fight in the lava, you know, stage, right? Maybe this as well. Right. How they're telling this, it's going to be tricky, but I hope they can take inspiration from Castlevania. Pikachu cherry pick, but pay homage as well to the original, but still make it your own. Don't feeling too tied down by the original. I know Shigeru Miyamoto, if he's really at the forefront of this project, he can they can make this a successful venture for Nintendo and Illumination together. Okay, let's move on. I'm not going. I tried to do the alphabetical thing, that's not, but yeah, have to move on. Okay, move on to Netflix. Why so long already? Okay, Netflix. They try to buff up their original properties. Now, aside from introducing other animated projects, they also introduce three anime series. One is Kagasta of an Insect Cage, and adaptation of Kacho Hashimoto, Hashimoto's Mushikago no Kagasta manga. Okay, the another one is the Japanese title. The title is from Japanese studio. Title Yasuke in a Watton feudal Japan of Max and Magic. Retired Ronin must take up his foot. God, suck. Sorry guys, if you do not know, I'm using English as a second language, so I'm quite an interesting person. I don't go out much, so it's my only place to talk in English, so I apologize for any fumbling of words, right? So please bear with me as I try to do this. Okay, take up his sword when he is charged with the task of transporting a mysterious child who dark forces want to eliminate. Just typical anime. The second title. The third one is they also producing an animated series based on a Filipino graphic novel. Tracy. I have no idea. With J. Olivia as the executive producer. Okay, the novel centers on Alexandra Tracy, a supernatural investigator who solves crime in the city of Manila, where figures from Filipino mythology interact with the modern world. Yeah, that's nice, right? Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. The reason I'm highlighting these news is because they are making two new anime series based on Altered Carbon and Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim, yes. We're going full circle here. Yeah. For Altered Carbon, it will explore new elements of the story mythology. If you haven't watched the Netflix series Altered Carbon, this the just like you can say it is inspired by Blade Runner universe, but it is a universe in and of itself, right? Universe, so it's really interesting universe that they can go to other places, they can focus on other stories in there. So having an anime series taking place in that same universe, so that's going to be interesting as well. Another project that is one to look forward to for me the most is Pacific Rim. So this mecha versus kaiju films is going to have its own anime series. I'm just going full circle because it is based on the on the Japanese kaiju genre, fighting, make big Big Mac fighting Big Monster, so they're going to have their own anime series. Craig Kyle and Greg Johnson, the co-showrunners on this series with by Legendary Entertainment, and the story will follow two siblings, an idealistic teenage boy and his naive younger sister, who are forced to pilot an abandoned Jaeger across a hostile landscape in a desperate attempt to find their missing parents. What's going to be a bit, solitary storyline here. Maybe not going to be. It's not going to be directly, directly influenced or directly correlate with the two films, right? Maybe just taking part in the same universe. Maybe the character from the films going to be in this one as well. So that one is still remains to be seen. So I'm looking forward to it because Netflix has been quite a place to go, right? You can see so many projects, so many new projects. It's a place for talents to thrive because they do not control them at all. They're just giving them free rein for better and for worse. But they're taking risks, and most of the time, it paid off. That's just good for Netflix. So I'm looking forward to see an Altered Carbon anime and Pacific Rim as well. So Pacific, I'm not sure. Nevertheless, let's move on to something quite different. Is if you do not know, Deadpool is going to have a re-release, a Christmas re-release titled Once Upon Deadpool. It's going to be Deadpool 2 that is going to be re-released, but it is going to be a PG-13. Yep, all the gore and everything is going to be cut out, which is really quite unconventional, right? Maybe this is a back way, a backdoor way for them to go, to try to introduce Deadpool into the MCU because of the merger between Fox and Disney is coming. So maybe this is one way to do it. But yeah, let's read through this. I'm going through the Deadline article. The Once Upon the Deadpool will have a limited engagement that begins December 12th and concludes on Christmas Eve, positioning it as a box office play aimed at young teens on holiday break from school. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's going to be the Deadpool 2 is going to be heavily edited to meet the PG-13 threshold of violence and language. There's also new footage in the form of a framing sequence that was conceived by Deadpool star Ryan Reynolds and writers Reed Reese and Paul Wernick. Working with a small film crew, Reynolds and his cohorts filmed all the framing scenes in a single hectic day of guerrilla style filmmaking. So I'll try to read this at the quote here. Fox has been asking for a PG-13 basically since the start in 2006, Reynolds told Deadline on Monday. I've said no since 2006. Now, this one time, I said yes, on two conditions. First, a portion of the proceeds had to go to charity. Second, I want to kidnap Fred Savage. The second condition took some explaining. Okay, if you do not know, Fred Savage of 1 Year's Fame will co-star with Reynolds in this extra scene, the filming sequence scenes for Once Upon a Deadpool, which hijacks its bedtime story set up from The Princess Bride, the 1987 classic. I watched that film. I love it for how it is telling the story, right? So Fred Savage is the child that the story a prince the Princess Bride is being told. So having him back just to, you know, just a framing sequence, just really how that pull operates, right? just as in his nature to do this kind of thing, breaking the fourth wall. So in eight scenes with him that will be used as interstitial additions to the existing pre-sequel footage. The runtime of Once Upon a Deadpool is about 3 minutes shorter than Deadpool 2, but Fox declined to be more specific about the new footage duration. So, okay, Savage told Deadline he's still playing along with the spoof concept. While my participation in this film was anything but voluntary, I am happy to learn that Fudge Cancer will be the beneficiary of this shameless cash grab. So they know they're doing it. Yeah, you can say it's cash grab. They know it already, but it is for cancer as well. So I'll read that part. Okay, there's a major charity component to the limited engagement release too, as Reynolds explains to Deadline that for every ticket sold, $1 will go to the audaciously named FUCK Cancer Campaign, which will be temporarily renamed Fudge Cancer for the purpose of the in fundraising effort. What is this for, you know, for good things as well, right? Train a listening film for charity, which is good. So whether or not the extra scene is going to tie in into Marvel, to how he is going to be reintroduced into the MCU, that still remains to be seen. But I think you can safely assume, right, that's going to be the case. Or probably they're just doing this just for the sake of it. Yeah, I don't know. I still don't know, but it is quite interesting how they're approaching this. If you haven't watched Deadpool 2, it is quite heavy in its language. Also, the gore, all the violence, all the cutting, all the blood. So how are they going to work through that? Are you going to go work around that? I can say that I'm interested to see how they going to do that. So we'll see. Yeah, this is for good cause, right? So you can say that Deadpool is doing it for cancer, which is actually quite in theme because of his own character, Deadpool, right? He's suffering from, you know, skin cancer, is it not? If not mistaken, right? Then because of that he was doing everything he can to work through it. Then he got into this project that give him this superpower, this superpower, regeneration superpower, right? It's about this, at least it's in team and it is for a good cause, which is good, I think. Yeah, what do you guys think? Are you going to watch it or not? It's for a good cause, right? I don't mind, right, paying it for a good cause. Okay, let's move on. Okay, I'll read through this. There is a list of best-selling games for each gaming console from the mid to late 90s. If you are the child of the 90s, I think you might be interested in this. So I'll read just the top one for every platform gaming console from Sega Saturn. The first one is Madden NFL 97. The next one is Nikes, which are Fighter 2, so on and so forth. There's also a Virtual Cop there. I've played it for in the, you know, what is it? Playing the shooter, I forgot what's the name. Playing in the arcade, yeah. Virtual Cop. Also, Tomb Raider as well. Okay. That's quite early. Okay, let's move on. Oh, the last one, the number 10 is Panzer Dragoon of Sega Saturn. Okay, for Sony PlayStation, which I did have before. Okay, the first one is Crash Bandicoot. And followed by Gran Turismo Racing, Final Fantasy 7, and so on and so forth. So the start of Metal Gear Solid as well, okay. On Driver, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. Okay, so interesting. Okay, we're moving a bit back. Nintendo 64. The first one, of course, Super Mario 64. And the next one, the second, is GoldenEye 007. Okay, Mario Kart 64, Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Donkey Kong, Star Fox, Super Smash Bros. Oh, it's been that long. Okay, moving on to Game Boy Color, which I also have before. Okay, the first one. Okay, yeah, it's not, doesn't surprise me. Pokemon Silver, and the second is Pokemon Gold. Okay, the third one, Super Mario Brothers, Yu-Gi-Oh. Okay, following through. Looking through Yu-Gi-Oh, Zelda, Donkey Kong Country. That's about it. Okay, we reached the last one, which is Sega Dreamcast. Number one is NFL 2K. Okay, number three, the game number four, you know, NBA 2K. There's also Soul Calibur there. Yeah. Number 7, Shenmue. Number 9, and number 10, Resident Evil Code. What is it? Just Code? Code Veronica, I'm not sure. Yeah, that's about it. Let me know what console did you have from this one? Do you have Sega Saturn, Sony PlayStation, Nintendo 64, Game Boy Color, or Sega Dreamcast? I have two of those, which is actually quite surprising for me, because, you know, you do not make of money before, but it is something that we have, something that we enjoy. Actually, I can enjoy playing it with my younger brother, my other family members as well. So let me know which one do you have and what games do you play the most there. I'm not sure about the Sony PlayStation. It's been a long time since I played it. I can't remember. I think I did play Metal Gear Solid before. But Crash Bandicoot, yes, I played it before as well. Yeah, it's been a long time. For Game Boy Color? Yeah, I think I did play Pokemon, but I think I played it on the not Game Boy Color, right? Without the color, that's the more the plain one, I think. Not sure that I did buy Game Boy Color or not. But I think most of the game that I play on my Game Boy is Pokemon. Okay, let me know it. The game console and what do you play the most? I'm looking forward to see. Okay, that's about it for at least for the game and movie for the pop culture. So I will try to touch upon culture a bit, because I just don't want it to be solely on, you know, entertainment. I try to cover real life as well, the culture part. Okay, The first one is the Google walkup, which actually happened 2 weeks ago. Okay, but I want to touch it because it's still good. It still hasn't been, you know, solved. If you don't know, last week, okay, tens of thousands of Google employees around the globe took part in a largely woman-led walkout organized in response to Google's shielding and rewarding men who sexually harass their female co-workers. Protesters held signs that said "I reported and got promoted," "Workers' right," "Women's right," and "Time's up" tag. Okay, the organizers, the seven main organizers, wrote that they were demanding an end to the sexual harassment, discrimination, and systemic racism that fuel this destructive culture in tech. Among their demands were an end to forced arbitration that disadvantages women who sexually harass, and pay transparency that would ensure that women and minorities do not continue to be underpaid and underpromoted relative to their white male peers. Yesterday, which is November 8th, according to this article that I'm reading from The Verge, Google agreed to some of the demands, most notably allowing arbitration to be optional in cases of sexual harassment, but others are still underdressed. Okay, it's quite a long article here. You can read some of the information. Sorry guys, I'm trying to see some of these points. UK, he's talking a lot about UK. Okay, if you read through the article, you can see that it has been going on for so long, even in UK, and you know, US as well. You know, since US is the leader of the global industry, so what anything that happens in US is going to be followed by other, you know, companies throughout the world, right? So even for Google, they're starting in US, then they're branching out, so you know, all the Google employees around the world taking part in this walkout, so they have expanded their branches, right, all throughout the world. So but the problem here is the approach to how they are treating their workers has been the same since the start, because you know it is admittedly has been a male Caucasian male led industry. It has been, you know, has been controlled by them. So and the after effect of this approach is they start to treat the other sexes and either other races not equal. They're not treating them equally, but they are trying to be, you know, championing their own, you know, their white male peers. So that's been going on for so long that you know they do not have. They're just going through the motion. All the women, all the minorities that has been working in the technology industry. So since Google, but since recently Google has been known in the news with some of their higher ups. I've watched, you know, the different co-show on YouTube. How they covered how some of the higher ups in Google has been treating the female co-workers, whether unjustly, doing some sexual harassment towards the female workers. But when they are being, you know, reported, the company itself do not actually punish these assaulters, the ones who are at fault, but rather, you know, giving them some of the, even like being promoted, like mentioned there, and giving them even, you know, even hand, yeah, even handing the harasser a multi-million dollar payout while they're being paid to step down. They're supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to be, how they say, they're doing something wrong, right? So they're supposed to be, they are supposed to pay for that, right? But they are benefiting from this serious power play. See, and the workers that has been harassed, that has been the victim, didn't actually coming out of this predicaments on top. They are just being frowned upon by the company itself. So that's mainly why this walkout has happened. So at least some of the demands that they want has been agreed upon by Google, but I mentioned here still some, the others are still unaddressed. So I hope they are making up for that, because today's world has been, it is going for the better, but there are still some, you know, prejudice here against women, against minorities, which is really unfortunate. But they should try to change, right? Even the Me Too movement is for highlighting those who are at fault, giving this woman that has been harassed before, giving them a voice. So going forward with that Me Too movement, this Google, what they have been doing towards their female workers, their, you know, minorities workers, so they're using that movement, that type of movement as well, try to make their voices heard, try to change their work environment for the better, which is actually, now we can see it is improving, but I hope it's going so slowly. So let's hope for the best for them, because this world should be fair to all. Don't, you know, have some prejudice against others. You know, we do not have this world for long, so let's try to make the best out of it. And that's how I want to end that one. So let's go back towards, we go through history, because last week is the 100th anniversary of World War I. That started in 1914 and ended in 1918. But it is one of the most deadly war that has happened in our modern world. Okay, I'll try to just read some of the synopsis here. World War I, also called First World War or Great War, an international conflict that in 1914 to 1918 embroiled most of the nations of Europe, along with Russia, the United States, the Middle East, and other regions. The war pitted the Central Powers, mainly Germany, Austria, Hungary, and Turkey, against the Allies, mainly France, Great Britain, Russia, Italy, Japan, and from 1917, the United States. It ended with the defeat of the Central Powers. The war was virtually unprecedented in the slaughter, carnage, and destruction it caused. It is one of the great watershed of 20th century geopolitical history. It led to the fall of four great imperial dynasties in Germany, Russia, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey, resulted in the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, and in its destabilization of European society, laid the groundwork for World War II. I am like most of you guys. I'm a bit oblivious of this great world event. I do not know all the intricacies. Just, you know, I admit, yes, like in World War II, you know, just playing it in games like that, in Battlefield, you know, all that game. It just, there was like for entertainment purpose, but you should know all the details here. So if you would like to be, you know, educated, just like myself, you can go to the links that I posted. You can go to my blog post for the links, or you can follow the link that I, you know, listed below. Try to be properly educated, because we should learn from our past, because history should not repeat. It shouldn't repeat itself. What's the, I forgot what's the phrase there. History, we should learn from our history, because we should not repeat it. I can't remember what's the correct phrase there. Yeah, but the sentiment is there. We should learn from our past, because we should not repeat it. Yep. That's what it's giving her moments of silence for those loss of lives 100 years ago. Okay, I hope you will try to learn through it. And we just hoping that we will not repeat it, because they did not learn from their history, because what to happen. And now into this quite volatile atmosphere, I'm just hoping that World War III will not come, but still looking bleaker and bleaker. But I'm still hoping that we will learn from our mistake all those years ago. Yes, hoping, inshallah. Okay. And okay, this is supposed to be last week, right? But during my recording here, I just learned that yesterday Stan Lee passed away. He is one of the backbone of Marvel, and the, you know, the comic giant. So, and through Disney with the Marvel Studios movie, his works has been adapted to be the leader of the popular superhero industry. So all his work, and he is a quite I cannot say much because we know how big his influence is, his influences in our pop culture. Lexicon with his works, with his writing, with his collaboration with other people, with Jack Kirby, and who the other guy who passed away just years ago, I cannot remember. Correct. I forgot. I apologize. There's another one who's other collaborator, and I'm just really unfortunate. Just 2 years, you know, after the passing of his long time lover or our wife, that is, I think he did actually died in peace, whether it is from on or of old age or other, you know, diseases or something. But I'm hoping he did pass away quite peacefully. 95 is quite a big bucket of wind, just like Kevin Smith used to say in his podcast. So I am quite saddened by this passing, because he has been, like I said before, he has been the godfather of our pop culture for all throughout these years, right? As the cartoonist, as the mainstay of Marvel, and now the, you know, mainstay of MCU as well. And his passion has touched on all people's, you know, millions of people out here. So 95 years old, he has lived a great life, and I hope he passed away peacefully and people will still will remember him, you know, as, you know, as a passionate guy, and remember his works most of all. And yeah, and I want to end this with his favorite Latin word, which is ever upward, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, excelsior. Okay, that's about it, and I will end this podcast. It's quite a bummer, but is I want to end it with try to highlight a passing of a great man. I think you will agree as well. So he deserve a mention. I think I'll touch upon it in next week as well, because it was supposed to be covering last week, but I really don't think it's appropriate for me not to mention him here, because just so recent for me. Okay, you can contact me on this. I'm using a new platform to give my podcast to other platforms. So what was the name again? I forgot. Crap, I always forgot. This cat, man, always making sounds. Okay, Anchor. I'm trying a new app here, so I cannot use it on my phone because it has really crappy microphone. So this new one, I only can actually use it for my PC. So I'm using on my computer. So I want to use this Anchor app because I want to see the analytics. I want to see how many people is downloading my podcast, because when I, you know, hosting the podcast myself, I cannot see how many people is downloading. So I hope through this Anchor app I can see how many is downloading. So, and the most important thing is I want to have some feedback from you guys who is listening. I never have any feedback through my years of my blog posting. I never have any feedback, like, at all. So when I try to venture out to through or is it you know imager have some feedback, so that's why why is it Instagram, so do not have it much feedback, so I want to through this app. So if you are listening it through you know Anchor, I hope you can give me some constructive criticism, give me some feedback, whether positive or negative. I will accept it wholeheartedly with open arms, because I know I this is quite a a peaceful podcast, because it's just a pet project of mine. I want to do it all by myself. I want to do it because I have some passion for pop culture, and I want to share it with as much people as I can. So I hope you will go with this journey with me, because I know I'm just still improving, and I'm since English is not my first language, I'm trying to be more fluent in it, because I do not have any people to talk to. So with this podcast is the only place that I can actually try to be more fluent, and I hope you understand some of the you know some of the negative things that happen throughout the podcast. So I hope you can go with me on this journey of self-improvement, so you can see how far the podcast has gone. Hopefully this is only the 13 right 13 podcast for me. Actually, I hope to be more I hope I can do it more do you more podcasts in the future, hopefully. So you can contact me all life in faith all the social media. You can contact me Twitter, Facebook, just type all life in faith, and Instagram as well. So right, what are the others? This cat's always making sounds, man. Sorry. Even my chat is making sounds as well. So. Okay, thank you for your time. Thank you for your patronage. Thank you for listening. And I hope you are at least a bit more, you know, have more knowledge on the pop culture. Oh, I hope I do. The. What is it? Which I hope the recap well, that you can actually be educated, and I hope you will come back for more. Keep on tuning in. So, and this is Alif, and thank you for listening. I hope I'll catch you down the road. I still do not have any catchphrase for how to end this properly. Anyway, 3, 2, 1. All life in faith. All life in faith. Okay, thank you guys. Bye bye. Assalamualaikum.